Are you ready, Brenda? Are all the members here?
Yep, and I started recording.
Okay, I'd like to call the May 6th Steuben County Agriculture, Industry, and Planning Committee to order. And the first order of business will be to approve the minutes from April 1st meeting.
Mrs. Mullen, I'll move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, it's carried. So Amy DeLugo, so you're here. Yes, you are. You want to take it away with your agenda items, please?
Not sure she heard me.
Amy, we can't hear you.
Amy? Amy, you have to put your voice in. Amy?
Put up a sign that says we can't hear you.
Now we can.
We see you, Amy. Are you speaking? Okay, all right, I can do that for you. The first one is. Amy, we can hear you, but your transmission is very shaky.
1 minute.
You want to try again, Amy? Brenda, do you know what the issue is here?
I'm sure it's her location. The internet is a little stuck. The system keeps saying that she has low bandwidth for video.
Okay. Can I move ahead with presenting the action and just see whether we can manage it?
Yeah, if that's what you want to do. Well,
hopefully she'll be able to hear any questions. So the first item is appointing a certifying officer for the CDBG project and declaring a project as a type 2 action. And this is a.
Mrs. Mullen, I'll move.
Second.
Anna.
And if you read the resolution that will be put forward, Amy herself is being appointed as the certifying officer. Pretty routine resolution. Are there any questions? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, carried. Next item is approving a sub-recipient agreement with Arbor for the CDBG project.
I'll move it. This is Hilda.
Okay.
Second.
Hannah.
All righty.
What exactly is a sub-recipient? So does that mean that we just passed through?
I believe so, because Arbor affects a lot of these, the sewer projects, the hookups to the eligible households, that type of thing.
Yes, it is a pass through. Yep.
Okay. Any other questions?
It just sounded really.
This is Aaron. I had a question. On the numbers 2 through 4, number one, we had a chance to read numbers 2 through 4. There's no real explanation. I was wondering if maybe we should skip to Jack's stuff while we're waiting for Amy, or do we have good explanations of what it all is?
I'm trying to find her report that she sent in. Give me a minute.
Amy, I'm on the line now. I finally got it. You're on the phone. Sorry about that.
That's a good, okay, yeah. Amy, we passed the first certifying officer for the CDBG project. Now we're on to approving the subrecipient agreement with Arbor.
Okay, so this is for that same new, that's for the same new project that we have that was approved at the last board meeting. And we have to do a new subrecipient agreement for each grant. So this is just our standard subrecipient agreement that we have with them every time for them to implement these projects.
What does that mean, the subrecipient? It means that Arbor is receiving on behalf of someone else, or what's?
No, they're our project management team. So the way these grants work, we administer the grant, and then they do most of the implementation, and we oversee that they're, excuse me, yep.
Sorry, who is it that does the implementation?
So Arbor does the project on the ground, project implementation, Arbor Housing and Development. For us, and then we oversee them and make sure they're following all the federal regulations, and of course we handle all the finances, and we're the primary, we have primary responsibility to Office of Community Renewal, and then there are our team that's actually out on the ground doing the projects.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions?
Yes, Fred Potter, I have a question. What is the official start date for this round of the CDBG funding?
So this funding we have been awarded. We are going through, once we get through the environmental review process, those funds will be released and ready. And once they're released, we can proceed with projects. I'm looking at, by the time we finish the phase one of the environmental review and publish the notices, and then there's a review period at OCR, the funds should be released by the end of June at the latest.
Okay, and will you be getting out the requirements for this new round to us as soon as possible so we can get them out to the towns?
Yes, I can certainly do that. Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? If not, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, carried. The third item, Amy, is the CDBG funds and the COVID response.
Yeah, so just one, the first piece is an informational item. There is CDB funding in the CARES Act, and I've been communicating with Jamie Johnson's office about, you know, how we're going to access those funds and what we might use them for economic development. Our CDBG funds will come through Office of Community Renewal, and have been communicating with them. They don't really have any information yet. I've been communicating with some other people that usually have the inside track on this stuff, and still waiting to hear when, how, what we'll have to do to try to access any of those CDBG funds that are specific to the CARES Act. The second piece of this is that with our, there is a waiver through HUD that lets us use existing grants, CDBG grants, for other COVID relief purposes. So what the Office of Community Renewal has done is they have made our, so the grant that we're currently working on, where we've already had the, we've completed the environmental review, the funds are released, and we're doing septic system projects. They have offered a waiver that we could use some of those funds for, could use some of those funds for rental assistance for people impacted by COVID-19. So I had discussions with Arbor Housing Development to see if there was a need for that and to establish a need. And apparently there is, currently there's 697 households waiting on the wait list for rental assistance. they do have some funding through the home program. They have home program for three counties that can cover people who are up to 60% of the AMI average median income. But there's a gap that 60% to 80% AMI, they don't have funding to help them. So we were thinking and looking for your approval to use some of those septic system funds to help the people in that 60 to 80% AMI that have been affected by COVID and they're on the wait list for rental assistance. What Arbor has proposed is they would re-qualify people so they can get up to three months of rental assistance. Arbor would re-qualify them monthly to be sure they're still at the 60 to 80% AMI and that they haven't gone back to employment. So these are basically households that they've lost their employment, and they can't be evicted right now, but you know, once things are open and courts are open, you know, they'll still be responsible for the 3 months of rent when they were unemployed. So this would be hopefully prevent some future evictions and homelessness going forward. And again, they have to be COVID impact. They can get up to 3 months. And what else? They'd be qualified. The landlords would be paid directly. The family or the household would have to be re-qualified each month. It only covers the rent. It can cover some security deposit and rent. It can't cover utilities unless utilities are part of the rent. So we were looking to see if you would approve this, and then we could amend our subrecipient agreement that we have for this grant. We could amend it with Arbor to allow them to use a portion of these funds for the rental assistance program.
Okay, Amy, this is Robin. I have a question. How big a pool of money do we have on this?
Well, we have, right now we have in the that grant, we have committed funds, our uncommitted funds that are not yet committed are about $193,000. And we were thinking just doing some back of the envelope figuring we probably wouldn't need more than $40,000 of that. And that's equivalent to approximately, when you figure in the engineering and everything, that's approximately two septic systems. So we'd be giving up two septic systems to provide rental assistance.
And this is Gary Swackham. I've got a question, please.
Mm-hmm.
With all the different money being given out for $1,200 here and there and unemployment and $500 extra, I guess, can you explain to me where these people fell through the crack?
Well, these are people that are not able to pay rent. They have probably been laid off. Well, they have to be COVID-19 affected. And they're falling within that 60 to 80% AMI, which, so for example, for a family of four, 60% of AMI is about $40,000. For a single person, that's $28,260 is 60% of AMI. So at our local rental rate, if they are on unemployment, they're falling in that AMI range, they're probably having difficulty paying their rent.
Well, didn't they get the extra money that unemployment pays?
I assume they have applied for unemployment. I don't know. I don't know the individual situations. And that's the thing that Arbor has to do the screening for this. I mean, they have to. So they have 697 people. I don't want to say people. 697 households waitlisted. However, they have not yet vetted those 697 households to be sure that they qualify.
I mean, don't they receive the $1,200 or $1,500 that is sent to our taxpayers?
Yes, I would assume. I mean, I don't know about the individual situations and their individual financial situations. Other than if they have to fall in the AMI range.
Yeah, I'm just curious how they fell through the crack with all the money that's being given out to unemployment and the extra $1,500 per person plus $250 per kid. You know, I'm just curious how.
Yeah, and the $1,500, if they're, you know, looking at some of the, so $1,500 with the current rental rates around here, that's probably, especially if they're a family of four, that's probably a little more than a month's rent.
Plus two fifty per kid.
Yeah. And so maybe they've got 2 months of rent and they're only gonna need assistance with one. The other thing is, you know, they may have applied for unemployment, but I know there's been delays in them receiving that, so that could be part of that too.
Robin, this is Kelly. Can I make a comment?
Okay, go ahead.
A couple things that we should point out is that the unemployment system has been bombarded with claims. And I know of many, many people who are eligible for it and they're still not receiving anything. They attempt to call every single day. And I've pushed them now to start calling Tom O'Mara and Phil Pomisano in order to push their claims along, but the system isn't designed to handle a lot of this work. And the other thing is the stimulus checks were $1,200 per adult, $500 per child under the age of 17. And there are even multiple issues with that, because if you typically can't have a bank account, which a lot of people do not have the ability to have a bank account, the checks are delayed or they're being mailed. So the funds are out there, but they're not necessarily easily accessible at this point. So we're going to have a lot of people get behind and not really getting access to these funds when they need to have it.
Okay, thank you. Just curious how they fall through the crack, that's all.
And Gary, we have to keep in mind too that the CARES Act right now only extends through July, and some of these unemployed people not only having trouble getting their unemployment, the rents are going to be due beyond July, and there may not be any other assistance available out there for them to pay the rent.
Thank you.
Hello.
This is Paul. One other thing to think about. I mean, they're both good points. The unemployment is being delayed for a lot of people who are having trouble getting through, but so are the rental payments. So, you know, and I think Gary's concern is that, you know, the unemployment is going to come through, then they're going to get this benefit, and other people who will have to pay their rent and got delayed, and these people, again, get an extra bonus when really they may have not barely needed it. I think that's his point. I'm just trying to say I understand it.
I have a question I'm trying to ask. Hello?
Hilda, go ahead.
So I'm confused. The $193,000 is what is uncommitted, right? How much of that are we saying we're going to try to use for this purpose?
Well, we were, like I said, we were doing some back of the envelope figuring, and we were thinking it probably, we wouldn't think it would be more than $40,000. And to some of the points that were being made as I was listening, the individuals will have to requalify on a monthly basis, so they won't get like 3 months automatically. You know, they'll get a month and then they'll have to requalify. So that might alleviate some of those concerns. But we were thinking up to $40,000. You know, I don't know if you want to put a ceiling on it or or not. That was what we were thinking. It probably would not be more than that.
You're looking at 197 families that are awaiting assistance. That 40,000 is not going to go very far.
Well, what with those households, they think they're going to be able to help a lot of them with their home funding. So those people in the up to 60% AMI, they have funding for them. So these people would only be those 60 to 80%. And they're not sure at this point. There may be some people on that waiting list that aren't COVID. They may be on for other reasons, and we can only use this for COVID impact. So they can try to help somewhere else for those people.
I don't want to prove.
I have a question, please.
Go ahead, Carol.
Amy, I know Arbor Housing also supports Mon County. Can we be guaranteed that this money will only go to Steuben County residents?
Yeah, this is only for Steuben County, and that's, you know, our contract with them. And I will be reviewing all that because that's our contract with OCR. It's only for Steuben County residents. I will say that the home funds that they have that's helping the up to 60%, that's not a program that we get money. We're not involved in that, that they get that money directly. They do that on a three county basis, but our CDBG funds are only for Steuben County.
And Amy, do the payments go directly to the landlords?
They go directly to the landlord, yes. And we would be doing the same way that we do septic systems. They will be paying it, and we will be reimbursing them once they've submitted all the required documentation. And then we get reimbursed from OCR.
Okay, do I hear any motion from a committee member to establish this $40,000 COVID assistance,
or not? Aaron Mullen, I'd like to ask a question, make a comment on it. I've been trying for
go ahead
a while. Yeah, I think it's premature on this. Landlords can't evict for 3 months from when this started, and they if they are put in a hardship situation, they have deferrals on their required mortgage payments for 3 months. And I think that there is a chance that state or federal municipalities may address that some of this issue. And I think it would be better to wait and see whether that happens before we do this, because nobody's going to lose their housing in the meantime anyways. We could wait a month and see, get more data before we make a decision on this.
Amy, this is Jack. Do you have a time frame of when the funds need to be accepted?
I don't. They did say once we make that decision, OCR can very quickly turn this around for us. And approve it, and then we can move forward with it. They did not give a timeline of when that offer was no longer open. They did not give us an end date for that.
Can I suggest maybe Amy checks with OCR on that, and then if we need a special AIP meeting before the board meeting to discuss it?
I like that idea.
Yeah, I can do that. I can definitely do that. I will follow up with them today and see what I can find out.
And then I have a question too. We talk about 40,000 that would have been used for septic systems to go to this. Do we know what septic systems wouldn't be done because we use the 40,000?
What would happen is, so we have people on the wait list. Those waitlisted people, so those two that we can do with this grant would roll into the grant that we're getting approved right now. So we have an additional 15 systems in the grant we're doing right now. So it would be a delay, I guess I would say, for two people on the, let's just say, I'm just average, it would be two systems on that waitlist would be delayed to the funding that we'll have open at the end of June.
Hey, Amy, it's Steve Mayo. I've got a question here. So these monies, the people who would receive them or the people who would be eligible to have their payments made, they're going to have to show they've actually been impacted by this situation. That's to say they're going to have to show diminution in income for them, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're not just going to give money, say, hey, you're on the list, so you get your money. You've got to show that you've been impacted somehow. And I guess the other point I would make is there's a lot of landlords don't have a mortgage, and so the fact that there's mortgage relief isn't really helping them right now if they're dependent upon rental income for their livelihood. So it doesn't help them if they're dependent on this income because they might get relief 3 months later. That's all.
This is Paul Van Castle. I agree with Steve on that point, but I would be more likely to accept the funds when the people who have applied for unemployment who haven't received yet, and that's why they can't pay their rent, is once their funds come through, or if they haven't received their stimulus for some reason, once those funds come through, that then we were apt to receive those funds back. At some time, when that money does come through, they get let off the hook for their rent when there's a lot of other people who didn't get that option. But I do agree with Steve on the renters who are suffering for people not getting their rent.
Okay, well, it's obvious to me that there's a little debate going on about this issue, and we just need to take a pause and consider it further, and maybe if necessary have an AIP meeting before the end of the month session. So hearing that, do I get a motion to table this for the time being?
I'll move that.
Second.
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Tabled for. And Amy, get back to us with that information, would you please?
I certainly will, and thank you. Thank you. That was a good discussion, and I'll follow up with Arbor with some of your questions as well, and I will see what the situation is through OCR and get that information to you as quickly as I can. So thank you.
All right, Amy, you're not let go yet. You have transportation funding.
So the next item is our mobility management program through the Institute for Human Services. And an informational item to start that too. New York State DOT, there will be some CARES Act funding for transportation, public transportation coming through New York State DOT. Discussions with them, they are still working on getting their contract with the federal government in place. And once they do that, then we'll have more information about how we access those funds and what they can access them for. For systems that have been impacted by decreased ridership or having to give up fares and that kind of thing as we've gone through this time. So that's an informational piece. So the second piece is the mobility management program that is funded through the 5311 funding, the federal transportation funding and the state funding. We applied for additional funding at the end of February. We have not received our award yet. New York State DOT anticipates making that award announcement in early summer, was what they told me. And then that would be followed by a contract, and then we can draw funds as soon as we have the contract. Up front, I'll say that DOT often lags in getting us. Sometimes they get us the award and it takes time to get the contract, et cetera. And I anticipate we'll be getting, speaking with them, we should be getting our award. Those funds are not in any danger, they're there. So in the meantime, the Institute has been operating mobility management, which at this time is important. They put people in touch and they arrange transportation for medical and important life essential things. They've been operating it since about, they used up their last grant funds in about November. So they've been operating, you know, expecting reimbursement when the new grant comes through. I don't know how much, I don't want to say too much, you know, in open session, but they at this time have requested if the county would consider an advance on those mobility management funds that were getting awarded. You know, usually they can support this cash flow associated with us for quite a long time waiting for New York State DOT to come through. It's just with the current, some current situations, they're finding they're not able to do that. What they're asking for is, could the county appropriate in anticipation of that award, $170,000, $170,788.13, pretty precise, that would cover them through the end of June. And again, I fully anticipate we will get this award. Just when those funds will come through is very hard to say. And I will say that sometimes it takes a while to get those from New York State DOT.
So I think our question, all the committee members will ask, where is this money going to come from?
Right, and that right now in the capital project that we have for this program, there's no money there. And this would have to come, I would assume, from county reserves or something until it would be reimbursed by the state when we get that grant award.
Okay, Jack, you got a comment on this?
Yeah, it's definitely a tough one. I mean, what the mobility management, especially in a time like this, you know, without their help, there are requirements that we have to meet, and the Institute helps us meet those requirements. So we do have a stake in it. It makes me a little nervous based on, you know, the current climate in terms of finances in Albany. But if, and my question to Amy was, you know, how assured are we in receiving these funds? And it sounds like pretty assured. You know, that then it becomes, you know, kind of a policy issue for you. You know, having them be cash flow negative, you know, is a problem because they help us meet some of the requirements that we have in terms of arranging transportation, specifically for Medicaid and other purposes.
So I did discuss the funding with the head of the Public Transportation Bureau at DOT, Mr. Sopris, and he said that that funding was, so this is federal funding that they get it over multiple, so they've hit, this is from like previous year, so they have this funding, it's there. Can't guarantee we'll get 100% of the award that we asked for because we did request an increase this year. I don't know if we'll get the increase, but I feel fairly certain that we'll get at least enough to certainly cover this and continue the program moving forward. It's a lot, it's just a timing issue at this point.
Amy, how much?
Aaron, I have a question about this.
Okay, Aaron first.
Sure. My question is, what would we do if the money didn't come in? Would we still be doing this anyhow?
I'm sorry, I muted my phone because my husband is moving a truck and my dog is barking. Sorry about that. I had to move to the other room. So, and again, I don't want to say a lot in open session, but I think it would limit their ability to continue to coordinate rides and transportation while at this time.
But what would we be, if we did not receive the grant money, would we end up contracting with them to do this anyhow? That's would we pay this money out anyhow? Is it that critical to us? That's what my question is.
And Amy can answer that better, but and I don't know the statutes or the regulations off the top of my head, but we do have responsibility for implementing a large portion of this, specifically for mobility management. So my assumption would be that if they were no longer able to serve under the contract, we would have to find another entity and pay to be able to do that.
Correct. Yeah, and some of the mobility management work that they do, so they meet the match for this grant is matched by services that they provide to DSS for transportation coordination for DSS. They do some things that we used to have DSS staff that did it, and we don't anymore, and they've been doing it. So I'm not sure what the status of that would be either.
Yeah, we would have to find a way to make that work if they did not provide it, because specifically for Medicaid enrollees, we have a response. We as a county have a responsibility for that. So we would have, to Aaron's point, could you contract with someone else, or could you bring staff on? One way or the other, we would have to do something.
Because it's Medicaid mandated.
That portion is, the DSS portion is.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of, yeah.
Okay, if we're going to have to do it anyways, I don't see a reason to hold back on it.
Let me jump in here. This is Paul Van Castle. The only question I have is, does it make sense, and is it an option to maybe pay a smaller portion of it, for the present time, and to see how, you know, the future waters look in terms of what's coming out of the future funds from the DMV.
Well, Amy, you said this 170 was going to cover us until when, the end of June?
Yeah, this would cover till the end of June.
That's not very far off.
Okay.
No.
I'll make the motion. This is Aaron.
Second, Hannah.
The motion.
The motion would be to appropriate $170,788 to Institute of Human Services to carry through with the mobility management services.
This is Jack. I would suggest you make that from the contingent fund, just to put it in there. That's probably the easiest way right now.
And Jack, that would be a resolution of the full board, I am assuming.
Correct. Yep.
Okay, so do you accept that amendment of the money coming out of contingency?
Yes, and the contingent would then be reimbursed when we receive the grant, correct?
Correct.
If we do it that way?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, and I assume I can put that right in the resolution at this time, right?
Yes, and it has to go to finance as well.
Okay, and finance, okay.
So we have a motion and a second. Did I hear a second?
Yeah, Anna.
Okay.
So I have a question. I'm not sure if it was already answered, but what's the total for the grant?
We applied for, it's a two-year grant. We applied for, I don't have it right in front of me, but I'm going to say it was approximately a little over 2 years. It was a little over $800,000. It's a significant amount of money.
This is Gary Swackhammer. So the motion would read for expense and revenue, correct?
I don't think that there's revenue. If you wanted to put in there that the money is then reimbursed once the grant is received to the contingent fund, we could put that in the resolution, but otherwise there's really no revenue.
That's what I was thinking. At least put that in there.
Yep.
You got that, Amy?
Put that in.
Thank you.
And then when we get the grant award, and when I do the resolution, when we accept the grant award, then we can make sure in that award also that
the funds get allocated back to the contingency. I mean, we can make sure that happens.
Okay, we're going to have a vote on the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? All right, carried. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, and thank you for your patience with my technical difficulties, and I appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Moving on to County Manager Jack Wheeler and Chris Brewer, the deputy. First item is the modifying the REDAC contract.
Yeah, Chris and Jen, they've taken point on this, so I'd ask them to present that.
Chris?
Sure, yeah, good morning. Yep, this is Chris. Good morning, everyone. We're requesting to shift gears and increase the existing REDAC contract that we already have to assist the organization in covering operating expenses. The grant funds that we'll be giving to them will help them cover their operating expenses while they do their day-to-day operations. As we've seen with this pandemic, this has hurt every industry, every business, and REDAC is no exception to this. Traditional funding sources, such as grants, donations, and fees have dramatically been impacted. So they've seen basically a convergence, as most businesses have, a reduction in revenue with increased expenses, which has, hurt their balance sheet as well. So we're looking to step in and help them, in this time. The funds for this would be coming from the Economic Development Fund, which has sufficient money in there.
This is Aaron. I have a question.
Sure.
Wait a minute. I want to hear a motion so we can go into discussion. Hilda?
I'll make the motion.
Sorry, your name. I couldn't tell.
This is Aaron. I'll make the motion.
Second, Hannah.
I did.
Okay, so Aaron, you had a question?
Sure. I just wanted to confirm that during this time that REDAC was also working hard to lend to and help businesses and small businesses through this pandemic situation we're dealing with.
Yeah, so I really didn't get into too much detail, but their traditional lending sources, which is the SBA, ARC, EDA, Those types of requests with their higher interest rates and higher fees have really, really slowed to a trickle, where the emergency loan fund that was discussed last month that the IDA and Corning Enterprises took part in, that has seen the demand. Unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, there's truly no fees for that to the business owner. The interest is very minimal at 1%. So the revenue side of it for REDAC is quite limited. So that's what I mean when, their revenue has dropped off. But their expenses, they're continuing to operate every day. They have higher technology costs as they have to operate from home, acquire different software. The needs have changed considerably in the last 2 months.
Chris, this is Jamie Johnson. Just to help answer Aaron's questions, I mean, with the emergency loan fund that was established with the help of the IDA and Corning Enterprises, REDAC has already approved, I believe it's 5 loans through that program. Very, very diverse loans, but all helping, fill a demand and a need. And the last count, I believe there were over 30 in the pipeline that they were working with that are all specific to Steuben County. So, that program in and of itself is really starting to make an impact in the community. And because of that, and I think Chris is, has confirmed this in his comments, that has, really increased the administrative demand on the organization, because during this time they're not bringing in any outside income like they traditionally would with their traditional lending.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Potter, I have a question.
Go ahead, Fred.
This money is a loan to them that will be repaid. Is that correct?
No, this is grant funds. to the organization.
Okay.
And this is coming out of the...
Yes, coming out of the Economic Development Fund, and similar to the other two organizations, the money given to the to REDEC is grant funds with no expectation of repayment.
This is in Bahamas.
Can I ask a question?
Sir, I have a question.
Hilda first.
How much was that?
$150,000.
Thank you.
John Malter, go ahead.
Yes, this does not diminish the amount of money that this fund was going to be, which was $500,000, I'm assuming.
You are correct in that. There's other means of, they're still trying to procure other participants within this to keep it at the $500,000 loan fund that will be a revolving loan fund in perpetuity. So that will continue to revolve as it's being repaid. So this will go on for hopefully a very, very, very long time.
My only other comment is that I believe the county should get an annual report as far as this revolving fund balances, what has been repaid, what's in it.
Absolutely, John. And to disclose, I am the chair of REDEC, so I do have my finger on the pulse of the organization, so I would be able to obtain any information that the committee would like or legislatures would prefer to see.
Okay, thank you.
And I would just add that in my extensive experience through the state government, that REDEC has been one of the better organizations in economic development in the Southern Tier for going on 25, 30 years.
Robin,
one more time.
Kelly has a question.
Oh, Kelly, go away. Sorry.
That's okay. The question is for the funds, the $150,000, are they going toward loans for businesses or is it going toward expenses for REDEC?
So the Steuben County government or any municipality cannot give money to be loaned directly or indirectly. So our funds are for operating expenses within REDEC.
Which then frees up those funds that REDEC can then distribute.
Correct.
Thank you for that clarification.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. I'd like to take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Jack, you're up with the SPCA.
Sure. So I sent out an email to all legislators. As you can see, they're related to a criminal case. There was a seizure of large animals that the SPCA has been boarding, taking care of, other expenses. I will say, they've done a fantastic job for the 4 years in running that we've had this $10,000 retainer. We haven't had to come back or they haven't had to come back for additional expenses. In addition, they do a great accounting. So if in 1 year, they don't just take that 10 grand retainer and just use it that 1 year, they actually carry that over and they have a good accounting of that. So they've expended all of the carryover funds that they had based on this one large case. The contract does contemplate, if you recall, when we did this presentation, some of you weren't here, but almost five years ago now, to change from what we were doing with SPCA to doing animal cruelty investigations with the sheriff's office and using SPCA as assistance, it did contemplate these unexpected, extraordinary cases, and these fees are in line with that. And again, there also is sufficient funding. There is $39,000 in the budget, so there is sufficient funding to be able to do this.
Okay. Will we get any of that money back from the state or from the case?
So, yes. So, and we've had it before. So if And you, I mean, I don't know how the criminal case would go, but if there is restitution, we would get money back. I can't, you know, guarantee to you how much, because I don't have the crystal ball, but that has happened in smaller cases over the past 4 years working with them, that since we've had expenses, we did receive restitution. It was more like, you know, $1,000 here, $1,000 there, nothing like this. But yes, we would expect that if there is a criminal conviction with restitution attached, that we would get money back.
I'm Walter, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Me? Okay. I was looking at that report and I see some bovines on there. After they get them in shape, what are we keeping them for? Why don't they send them to the Empire Livestock and get rid of them?
I was thinking the same thing.
Well, I don't think so. I don't think SPCA does that. And since it's an ongoing criminal case, I don't think, you know, that is something that SPCA can do. Jen might be able to weigh in on the legalities of that, but.
They're not allowed. They have farm sanctuary or take care of them.
In some cases, the owner of these animals sometimes turns them over. Is that being pursued at this point?
I honestly don't know.
Jen, I'm just going to suggest here that until there's disposition of the court case, I'm sure the animals are just going to be status quo.
That's what I was going to say, Carol. It has to either, that's something the district attorney has to weigh in on if there's a criminal matter going on. So, yes, PCA is powerless at this point.
But I don't disagree, Mr. Nichols, in the fact that, you know, normal farming practices are such that, you know, why aren't the bovines just dispositioned?
There's a shortage of hamburger right now, I hear.
Got a problem.
All right, so back to the issue of the appropriation to make the SPCA whole on this particular extraordinary case. Is there a motion?
Yeah, I'll make a motion, Hannah.
I'll second it, Lando. Okay. So what's the recourse? I mean, it sounds like we really don't have a choice. What else could happen if we don't do this?
There really is no other recourse, because they actually have expenses related to helping us, you know, with criminal cases, and it's worked very, very well. Up until now, they do it very economically. Again, this is just an extraordinary case.
We had a case back when, what, 18 horses? That other case?
Yeah.
That was about $75,000. Yeah,
that really kind of broke us. So this is another one we just hoped it wouldn't happen, but it has. So
this year we've budgeted for this situation to happen. And for the last 3 years, we haven't had to use any of that money. And now is the time.
Yeah. And if you saw, go ahead, John.
I have no problem, you know, of sitting out there appropriating more funds to carry these expenses. I still think that we need to sit out there and pursue the situation of having this farmer for these animals so we can dispose of them. We're just going to have ongoing costs.
That's true, John, but that's something that if there's an ongoing criminal case, that's something the district attorney has to deal with.
Then we should pursue that.
Yeah, we should.
This is Mullen. I have a few comments on this. I think that we should consider a local law, if it's possible in the future, to be able to document whatever is documented with the animals and then sell them and hold the money to reimburse the owner, so that we don't incur these kind of costs for an animal that's a farm animal that could be easily old and someone else could take care of. I think that on the, you know, I'm comfortable with paying them with their shortfall, but I did have a question on, one other comment before my question. I think that we should see if Brooks is willing, along with us, to make an offer to the farmer to purchase them so that we can sell them and cap our damages on this. And I also think that, all right, my question was, I see that there was a carryover shortfall from last year's budget. That's the part I'm a little bit confused on. Why we are paying for last year's carryover shortfall, and what our balance is over the course of this contract. Is it, do they go back 1 year? Do they always roll over a balance? I just had a question about that.
Yeah, they roll over any unexpended funds. It's normally not a significant amount of money, because 10 grand, you know, with the animal cruelty cases that they do deal with, unfortunately, you know, they haven't rolled over a significant amount, but they do. I was a little surprised. We received this actually the day the pandemic started on March 14th. I was a little bit surprised about the shortfall from last year. But again, you know, the contract does speak to extraordinary cases. So, you know, making them whole, and this is making them whole, but it also is anticipating to get them through the end of the year so that they don't have to come back. And any funds that are not expended would then be carried over.
Okay, so we have a motion in a second. No other
questions? Robin?
Yes.
This is Mike. I'm thinking I should have made that motion, because periodically or once in a while, they'll ask me to help them with real estate. So I probably should abstain from the vote.
So do we want to back up? I think we have to back up at this point. If you're recusing yourself from this, I need a motion from another committee member for appropriating this.
Who moves it?
And who was the second? Because I don't recall. Hilda, I think you were the second. So can I have a different second from another committee member, please?
This is Mullen, I'll second it.
Okay, thank you. All right, so we now have another motion and second to appropriate the money for the shortfall for the SPCA. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And Mike, you're recusing yourself?
Yes, please. Okay.
Abstaining. Okay, got it. All right, Jack, is there anything else?
Nope, Jamie had an item to bring up under other business.
Okay, why don't we tackle that right now? Jamie, you there?
Yep. Sorry, I had to unmute myself. As in the past, we have presented resolutions, concurring resolutions to all of the taxing entities for renewable energy projects. These concurring resolutions basically lock in our distribution rate based on today's or this year's current tax rates, and which provides a, you know, significant assurances to all of the municipalities over the next 20 years for renewable energy projects. So you know exactly how much you're going to get and what you're going to get each year. The true beneficiary of this are the smaller municipalities, because what it does is it protects them from, changes in their tax rates, so they can take this revenue if they so choose and apply it towards a reduction in the tax rate. What has happened in the past is that when municipalities have done this without these concurring resolutions, in essence, that reduces the amount of pilot revenue that they're going to get from the wind projects or the renewable energy projects going forward. So it really has a negative impact on their ability to use this revenue to help keep the tax rates lower. So with Barren Wind, we were able to negotiate and get approvals or consent resolutions approved from all of the taxing entities, including Steuben County, to basically freeze the rates based on today's rates. Then becomes a fixed payment formula. So when the county and all of the municipalities get our pilot schedule, the numbers that are basically outlined in the pilot schedule will be exactly what the payment will be each year going forward for the life of the pilot. So what we have requested and what I'm requesting this body do is to consider moving forward in basically an identical resolution for the Canisteo wind project. That was presented to Jack and the team, you know, a while ago, and because of COVID, it just had missed a couple of agendas. So I'm asking this group to advance an exact duplicate of the resolution, except with different municipalities listed to the full legislature for the Canisteo wind project to basically freeze the rates.
Okay, thank you, Aaron.
This is Aaron. I'm going to abstain from this. I represent all of the towns in the Canisteo Wind project. I know that the towns are all very much in favor of this, but I'm not going to vote on it because I'm working for them on it.
Okay. Do I hear a motion from committee?
Move it, Helda.
Second, Hannah.
Okay. Motion and a second. Any other questions for Jamie? I think it's pretty clear. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And Aaron Mullen is abstained. Correct?
Correct. I abstained.
All right. Motion carries. Okay, and Jamie, could you hang on the line because the next agenda item might need your input or at least listen in? Okay, so
can I ask Jamie a question while he's still on?
Okay, go ahead.
Jamie, with Frank Arcuri moving to Corning Enterprises, do we have a replacement for him on the Project 86 or?
So where we stand with that, and we had a call it an unfortunate series of events occur all at the same time, right before the COVID pandemic, where Betsy Hale took a job basically out west, closer to where she had originally lived, and had resigned her position as president of Three Rivers Development. Subsequently, with Tom Tranter transitioning out and Chris Sharkey taking over, you know, a part of Tom's role, there was a position at Corning Enterprises, and you know, I still blame Chris for this. She stole Fred from Three Rivers, and basically had Fred fill the position. So part of what Fred's current tasks are is workforce development. So he's continuing to manage the I-86 workforce development initiative through this transition period. Most of you have probably seen, it was in the paper, Three Rivers did just hire Susan Payne to come back full time as the president of Three Rivers. And I've been in communication with Susan over the last couple of weeks about how we move and transition the entire I-86 initiative forward, because Three Rivers was really the managing agency for that. In addition to how to move it all forward, that included what we do about Fred's position. And Susan has some ideas and actually has has a couple of recommendations of people for the steering committee to consider to replace Fred. And those are going to be discussions that the steering committee has when Susan physically gets up here. Ironically, Susan is currently living in Florida, and she is trying to transition and permanently move back up here from Florida. And told me just yesterday that you know, they're having a hard time getting everything moved up here because you know, as they look to drive back up here from Florida, they're having a hard time getting hotel rooms because nobody will allow her to stay in a hotel because she still has New York license and New York license plates on her car. So you know, because of COVID, they're even having a hard time getting hotel rooms to drive back up here. But the hope is that by mid-May, she will be back up here and in her position, and we're going to be working to advance replacement of Fred and you know, I don't want to call it a restructure, but moving forward with the entire I-86 initiative. You know, the thought is, and this is one of the things I've talked to Chris and Susan about, is, you know, what form does I-86 take now? Because everything we were working towards, especially with the workforce development, has all changed. And, you know, we need to start being proactive in our response plan. And those are conversations that we've had just this week. And I know Susan is planning on discussing with the leadership of Three Rivers about how we manage this and use Three Rivers organizationally to sort of serve in that role in helping develop a recovery plan, you know, from an economic development standpoint. So to answer that, that was a long-winded answer to your question, Hilda, but you know, we are working on it. The work has not stopped. Fred is continuing to manage it through this transition. And, you know, we hope that in the coming weeks, there's going to be an aggressive approach towards looking at specifically workforce and how we manage the projected or anticipated workforce issues that we feel we're going to be facing as we move to recover from the pandemic.
Two things. We just came back from Florida 2 weeks ago and we had the same issue, but if she stays in Georgia and Virginia, she's good.
Okay, I will let her know that.
Let her know. The other thing is, once all this settles, Scott, can we get for a chairman's meeting maybe an update on all of these changes? Because these are major changes.
Yeah, we have a whole list of ones that we're going to do for chairman's meeting, but unfortunately, until we get back to meeting in person, we can't.
This is Carol. I have a question.
Go ahead,
Carol. Just so you know, we have a 1030 land bank that we need to get to. So if we can move along, it'd be helpful.
Well, my question will be quick. A few months ago, Fred was going to present to the AAP committee. Is he still going to do that before the transition?
So Jamie and I and Chris have had some conversations because there were a lot of it was going to be discussing the workforce summit that has been canceled. So we can talk about where we are, but like Jamie said, since the landscape has changed so much, there are some very good things that Fred was working on that I think will carry over, but I think the focus is going to shift. So, you know, that's certainly up to you folks, whether you want kind of a historical, what was going on before this view or not. And, you know, just wait until we have kind of where we're going from here.
And just to tap onto that, Fred is working on the annual State of the Workforce Address. I saw my first draft of that. I shared it with Jack. I think it gives a very good historical perspective. But what Chris Sharkey and I talked about last night was it did not do a good job of looking into the future. And Fred is working on, you know, putting some finishing touches on that and identifying the needs that we see with workforce going post-COVID. And once that is done, he is going to be releasing that or hopes to release that after, you know, it gets blessed by the full steering committee. You know, I think after that is released, you know, it may be a good opportunity to get Fred and others in front of AIP if the board so desires.
Okay, that sounds like a plan. Can we move on to the last item of business? The Article 10 siting law, that resolution is somewhat incomplete. Aaron agreed that we could bring back and let's have a short discussion. The Article 10 siting law, as it came out of the 2020 budget from the state, came out looking a little bit different than what we expected. And the initial reaction we had before we had all the details was that it was removing all local input from energy projects within our county. So having said that, now it looks a little bit different and we need to have some input as to whether or not we're gonna go forward with a resolution opposing what's been done in the budget to the governor's office. Obviously this would just be a memorializing resolution, or are we not so unhappy with the outcome from the budget? I guess that's the question.
This is Aaron. I have looked at most of the new law. It's in 94C, the executive law, and I think it's pretty good. I think it's pretty good. They are going to be developing rules still on how the agencies actually treat all this, including developing model siting standards and things like that for the agencies. And if we were to do a resolution, what I would like to say is just as they develop their rules, to do them in a way that gives great deference to local laws. There is a provision in there that said in the law that says that basically they will give deference to local laws unless they unless the local law is deemed to be unreasonably burdensome in light of the state's environmental goals. And so that's where some of the rule making will come into play and exactly how they interpret that. But I think it treats the local municipalities pretty well while also, you know, giving some of the developers some assurances that they're not going to be stuck in a queue for 10 years.
Yeah, I would concur with that. I know we have been able to get involved in participating in a series of webinars that NYSERDA has put together primarily for developers, but because we've been working closely with a number of them, we've gotten the invitations to sit in on the webinars. So, you know, either I'm on them or Jill Statz from my office has participated. And I think there's a lot of questions around the rules yet, but I agree with Aaron that it does look as though, you know, they're planning on continuing to give deference to local laws. The other interesting part of the entire approval is that they are partnering with Power Authority, and they're actually, the state is now going out and they're seeking to sign purchase and sale agreements on land that is being targeted for development. And they're working on targeting that land. And what the hope is the state, instead of, you know, doing one-offs for projects, the state is going to secure or at least get under contract, you know, significant acreage throughout the state. They're going to take that acreage, get it all pre-permitted, and then put together an offering, a large offering to development groups. And we've already been contacted by NYPA Power Authority, and Bend County is one of the first to be reached out, and we've seen the draft purchase and sale agreement. You know, we've submitted it to a couple of property owners that they've targeted already. So we'll see how that process goes. But I do think that you know, the process, while it streamlines approval, it does still give you know, give allowances for local communities to participate in.
Okay, so are the committee members in agreement that we will monitor, if you will, the rules as they develop and let go of, for this moment, just not follow through on the opposition resolution?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay. All right, so I guess that just leaves us with a motion to adjourn, unless somebody else has any business, but we do have to get on the land bank.
This is Mullen. I'll make the motion to adjourn.
I'll second it. This is Paul.
All right. Motion to adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.